All right, I want to welcome to the show Joel Habaker. Joel is an award-winning teacher, Amazon number one best-selling author, professional speaker, a blended family family coach who loves helping families live more positively and cooperatively together. Having been a part of a blended family for most of his life, Joel now seeks to help others in similar situation. He has recently written a 31-day devotional for blended families, and he is currently working on both a book and an online course based on his 10 commandments of blended family life. Joel is a divorced and remarried husband, and he has two teenage daughters from his first marriage. Joel and his family currently live in Alabama with their two rescue dogs, Bruiser and Butterscotch. I'd love to hear about them. No. And when he's not busy speaking, writing, teaching, or coaching, Joel is longing for the day when he can go on his dream vacation. Listen to this. Visiting Hobbiton in the Shire. Yes. Welcome, yep. Joel. So excited to have you.
Jody, thank you. I'm really excited to chat with you. And I love all things Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. Nice. And my classroom has Middle Earth maps. I don't have any U.S. or world history maps. I have maps of Middle Earth and Arda and Numenor and things like that. And wow, so it's a lot of fun. Awesome. Yeah, it's good times.
That's so cool. Yeah, it's great, learning. I love learning these little snippets of people's lives, and this is great depth of your character to be like, yes, this is awesome.
It is. It's something my kids have probably grown tired of in their lifetimes, because they don't go a day without me saying, Tolkien has this to say about whatever it is, and I'll rattle off some quote from Lord of the Rings, and they just sort of roll their eyes. It's like, it's okay. One day they'll appreciate it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So many gems in both Tolkien and Lewis. So yeah. Can't go wrong. Absolutely. Can't go wrong. So tell me more about where you got started, or why you got started wanting to be a blended family, step family coach. Tell us the origin. Where did that begin?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the introduction. One of my favorite things about doing shows is when you can write your own introduction, nobody knows if you're lying. And so you can just say whatever you want and people just buy it. And it's wonderful. So I started my blended family journey as a teenager. My parents split up when I was in middle school, and about a year later, my mom started dating my stepdad. And so I saw it from the side of a kid going through divorce, or a teenager whose parents went through divorce. And then I got married for the first time halfway through college. I was 19, and that lady and I were married for 8.5 years. We had two kids together. They're teenagers now. We divorced about a decade ago, and she remarried about 6.5 years ago. I remarried about 6 months after she did, because next month will be 6 years that I've been remarried. And so I've seen it again from the side of being a teenager whose parents split up, and I've seen it from the side of being an adult with two kids going through divorce. And unfortunately, in our culture, there are a million horrible examples of how to have a divorce and a post-divorce relationship. There are not very many good ones. And I feel ridiculously blessed to have seen a good one. I can remember being in high school and having Thanksgiving dinners with my mom, my dad, my stepdad, and my stepdad's dad, and my mom's mom, and then all the kids together. And I didn't know that was weird. I didn't even know that was strange until I went to college, and people are like, oh, you're going home for Thanksgiving? Who's going to be there? And I'd tell them that, and they go, I'm sorry, back up a second. Your mom and your dad and your stepdad are all going to be around the same Thanksgiving table. Yeah, is that not how most families do it? You don't celebrate Christmas together anymore when your parents divorce? That's really weird. I didn't know that was a thing. And I didn't. And so, again, my goal was not ever to be divorced, but life happens. And so when we went through our divorce, my constant mantra was, how would my parents have handled this? Anytime I came across something I wasn't sure what to do, what would my dad have done? What would my mom have done? Because they had a better divorce than a lot of marriages that I've seen. After my parents split up, my dad moved like 2 miles down the road, and we lived with mom. We went to dad's every other weekend, but dad came and picked us up for school every day from mom's house. So we still saw dad every single day, or almost every day. And so, my ex-wife and I have been divorced now for 10 years. And she lives about 1.5 miles down the road. And our daughters, my older daughter lives with her mom full time. My younger daughter comes back and forth each week. But even on the weeks when she's not over here, I can stop by and I can see the girls at their mom's house. Their mom knows she can stop by and hear over here anytime. We try to coordinate our schedules because the kid, again, they're both teenagers. They play club sports or high school sports or both. They've got, my older daughter is a phenomenally talented singer. She does a lot of choir stuff. She sang at Carnegie Hall last year, which is incredible. Her mom went up there with her for a week while they were practicing and doing all the preparatory work, and then I flew up for like the 2 days before the performance and the performance, and we were the only ones there. It was her mom and me and then our daughter. And that was okay. We obviously stayed in different hotel rooms. But it was one of those things where it wasn't weird for us to be together and watch our kids sing on the stage. And we wish that their step parents could have been there, but there are other kids that had to be taken care of, right? Because at their mom's house, they also have a little brother. So their mom and their stepdad have a toddler son together. And so our lives are complicated. But we've been very, very blessed because I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression. It's not all, you know, butterflies and sunshine every day. But we've had some really great help. We've received some really good counsel. And we've been very blessed to find a way to not just coexist peacefully, but to actively help each other in terms of raising our kids together. Yeah. And again, I look around, like we were talking about before we came on, everybody knows somebody in a blended family. I read a statistic not long ago that said something like, I forget how many hundreds of new blended families are created every day in America. Just in the United States, hundreds and hundreds of new blended families created every day by remarriages happening. And everybody knows somebody that's in that situation. Most people at this point are connected to a blended family in their extended family. Mm-hmm. And my thinking is, if I can help other people figure out how to do it a little bit better, that's something I want to do, because again, we've been very blessed and I would love to try to help others. If that means helping them avoid the mistakes that I made, excellent. If that means helping them get over having made the same mistakes that I made or different ones, that's okay too.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's where a lot of this passion comes from. Again, I've been a high school teacher for 14 years. The last 7 years I've taught at a small Christian school in Gadsden or Rainbow City, Alabama, called Westbrook Christian. And I love that school, great administrators, wonderful colleagues. And we're also associated with a place called the Big Oak Boys and Girls Ranch. And that's a Christian organization. It's a second chance home for kids who have been abandoned or abused or neglected or whatever. And so at any given time, about 1 out of 5 of my students comes from the Big Oak Ranch. Well, that's a different kind of blended family, because you have kids from all different backgrounds also living in the same house with a biological family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We've also got family that have, like my older brother has 3 foster kids, and my wife's older brother has 2 biological kids and 2 kids adopted from China. Well, those are all different kinds of blended families, fostering and adoption and divorce and remarriage, or a widow marrying someone who's also got kids. These are all different kinds of blended families, and we're connected with all these. And again, my goal is to try to help people live their lives a little bit better, more positive, like you mentioned in the intro, more cooperatively. And it starts with a mindset shift, and then the mindset drives the actions. The heart and the head and the hands all have to work together in order to make these changes and make them last. And so that's a short version of what I try to do in terms of teaching people how to maybe do things a little bit differently.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that you had, first of all, that you had that good example from your upbringing. That's family culture right there. You know, that you can look to your parents for an example. And what a blessing that is, that it was a good example or a good situation for you. And, you know, that can't be easy. I mean, it's hard that, you know, when you're already going through something that is painful and potentially traumatizing, but at the same time, it's not like your children perceive the family as dissolved, you know, you're still their parents. They still look to you as their parents. And it would be even more traumatizing, I imagine, that if you as the mom and dad talk negatively about the other or, you know, start deteriorating that relationship, then it does feel more like the family is dissolving and that much more traumatizing, right?
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, it's like you mentioned,
I think we have a little slight delay. That's good.
Sorry. No, one of the things you mentioned I wanted to touch on, I think you mentioned it really well, is that when kids are in the middle of a divorce, they don't understand necessarily everything that's, especially when they're younger. So my kids were, 3 and 5 when their mom and I split up, something like that. They were too young to know exactly what was happening and way too young to have any need or reason to understand why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All they knew is their lives were changing and things were different. Dad didn't live at home anymore. And then they moved into a different place in the same town. And it was just, it was just different.
Yeah.
And one of the single biggest things that we as adults that are dealing with this need to understand is that the way that we talk to or reference the other adults involved has a huge, ridiculously oversized importance and impact on how the kids are going to perceive stuff. If yeah. That's one of the big things I talk about, but I think it's important to mention up front. I don't ever want people to think that I'm going to come in holier than thou and say, well, I did everything perfectly, and let me just tell you how to fix your divorce situation. No. Okay.
Yeah.
I gave a presentation on blended families one time to a local civic organization, and I got done and I asked for questions. A lady raised her hand. She said, I just got a quick question. I said, yeah, what's up? And she goes, well, how do you help people with this and not get punched in the face? because I can understand where she's coming from, because a lot of what I have to tell people is not fun. It's not right. What they want to hear. It's going to challenge them. But the truth of the matter is, the way that I go about that is by beginning from a standpoint of empathy. Right. So if you're hurting after a divorce, I'm not going to tell you, you should just get along with your ex and act like everything's fine. What I'm going to tell you is, I understand you're hurting. I understand why you're hurting, because I've been there. I've been through a divorce. I remember the pain, the bitterness, the anger, the resentment, whatever emotion you want to mention. I got it. I'm 100% identify. And what you're feeling is valid. So for anybody who's listening right now, if you've been through that, I understand what you're feeling. And yes, it's okay to feel that way. What I want to do is ask you a quick question. One, are you happy with where your life is regarding your ex and your kids? Are you happy with the relationship and the family situation? And if the answer is no, then what I would like to do is, number two, to invite you to consider doing things differently. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the whole approach. If you're not happy with where you are, then let me ask you if you'd be willing to try things a different direction. And if so, let's see if we can get you some different results. And that's it. Yeah. It sounds really simple. And it is, but it's also really, really hard.
Yeah. Well, it's questioning the way that people, quote unquote, just do divorce or mm-hmm. do breakups. You know, it's like the only examples that we ever see are hatred and butting yeah. heads and, you know, animosity yeah. and contention. And yep. so it's like, I like what you're saying is to say, let's take a pause, let's hit pause and say, okay, why does it have to be done that way? It doesn't. We can right. look at it from a different approach and resolve this in a different way than we would typically mm-hmm. expect, just because it's always done that way, but right. we don't have to expect yep. that.
Yeah, 100% agree. I'm a huge fan of asking the question, why did we make that decision, or what was your decision-making paradigm? How did you arrive at that conclusion? Again, as a history teacher, we talk about this in class all the time. It's not just about who did what when. The real question that matters is, why did they do that thing? Yeah. And the answer is probably not any one bullet point. I'm a huge fan of the Aubrey Maturin naval books written by Patrick O'Brien. They're about life in the British Navy during the Napoleonic Wars. And there's a quote from one I was listening to an audiobook recently where the guy said, in psychology, just like in history, we often have to look for multiple causations. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing with divorce or with why people are angry with each other. It's normally not just one thing. Right. If my right. wife's mad at me, it may be because I left the toilet seat up or I left dirty clothes on the floor. Really, it's probably because I did all of that and some other things all within about a half hour. It's probably not any one
thing. Yeah, never mind her perspective of being already, maybe she's already stressing out and she's already,
that's
you know,
exactly
it's like
right.
her triggers are included in that whole process
yep.
as well.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what it is we need to ask the question why, and we need to be willing to say, okay, is there more? Is there more? Is there more? Is there more? Because if you're only dealing with part of the symptoms, you're not actually going to be able to solve the problem. And so you're right. It's good to try to help people identify what the problems are, but it's also really good to say, okay, well, let's try making different decisions by approaching this whole thing from a different perspective, right? Because most people, and again, I've been that guy, so please don't hear me condemning them. Most people who are experiencing deep hurt, that's what they also act out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And that's understandable, because when that's the biggest emotion that you're feeling, that's the easiest one to rely upon to guide your actions. That's not the best move that we can do. And we know that deep down. That's why we teach our kids, listen, just because you're angry doesn't mean it's okay to hit your sibling. But I'm really angry, but that still doesn't make it okay to hit them. But it's like when we become an adult, we sometimes tend to forget the things that we would teach our children. Just because you're mad doesn't mean you have to act out of that anger. I know you want to, and it's going to make you feel better temporarily, because again, I was that guy. But I'm telling you, in the long run, it's not doing anybody any favors. And if you have kids, you can't afford to do that and make that your lifestyle, because all it's going to do is cause them damage in the long run as well.
Right. All right. So I heard you say empathy and self-control and coming from a different perspective as you're going through this divorce and things.
Yeah.
What's another skill that you teach to people going through in this, you know, divorce that helps them to have that cohesiveness as a family and to go through it with a little bit less pain?
So there's one word that I want to mention and then two principles that undergird everything that I do. The word is humility, right? Humility. It is quite possibly the most misapplied or misunderstood word in the English language. A lot of people think humility means pretending you're not good at something when you know that you are, right? If someone were to ask LeBron James, are you good at basketball? And he went, well, I mean, yeah, I'm okay. Like, oh yeah, he's being humble. No, he's not. He's lying to you. That's stupid. Right. He knows he's good at basketball. And the thing is, it's not arrogant for him to say, yes, I'm good at basketball. That's okay. I mean, if someone were to ask Nolan Ryan, were you a good pitcher? And he says, no, that's just wrong. Nolan Ryan was a brilliant baseball pitcher. Like, come on, man. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's not pretending that you're not good at things. Humility is not a pretty girl saying, oh, I'm ugly. That's not humility. Okay. Humility, C.S. Lewis tells us, humility is just not thinking of yourself at all, right? It's taking yourself out of the equation. So that's what I try to teach in terms of a lot of blended family stuff. It's not the question of what do you want? That's not the question we're asking. The question we are now going to start to ask is what is best? What is right? What is proper? Right? Because what I want is probably not going to be best 100% of the time, right? If I want pizza and french fries for dinner every night, that does not mean it's a good idea. Right. And I'm thankful that I have my wife to remind me of that, or I would take up three times as much room as I do, because I could totally eat pizza and french fries every single night. Just because I want it doesn't make it right. Right. And so we have to ask ourselves, are we doing this thing because I want to, or am I doing this because I truly deep down believe this is the best thing?
Yeah.
And again, it's easy to not make that kind of decision when you're hurting. When you're hurting, it's hard to make that kind of decision, because what if the best thing is something that's going to cause you more hurt? Well, that doesn't mean that it's not the best thing, right?
Well, yeah.
And that's not fun, but that's what it is to be a parent. I mean, every parent knows sometimes what you have to do for your kids that's the best thing, they're not going to like it. They're going to slam their door, they're going to yell, I hate you, or they're going to cry and cry and cry. It's still the right thing. And if your children have never said to you, you don't like me, or, you know, I hate you, you may not have been tough enough on your kids.
Right.
As a dad of two teenage daughters, if your kids have never been mad at you because you punished them for something, you may have let them off the hook too easy. Just tossing that out there.
Good. I like that. No, it's true. It's so true. I really appreciate that. I feel like it's really just saying, you know, how can I be mature about this situation?
Yeah.
It's not always a fun word to say either, right?
No, it's not. Especially when we're hurting, because we want to justify our actions.
Yeah.
And so that kind of leads me to the two principles that I mentioned. The first one is very easy. Again, this is the bottom line of everything that I teach. First principle is this: you need to be the adult that you want your kids to become, right? So do you want your kid, like, and again, even if you're divorced, you and your ex can probably agree on a couple things. Do you want your kid to be honest and have integrity, or do you not? Do you want your kid to be responsible and reliable, or do you not? Do you want your kid to treat other people with kindness and gentleness, or do you not? Right? Because most people would say, yeah, I want my kid to have integrity. I want my kid to be responsible. I want my kid to be reliable. I want my kid to be kind. Okay, good. Then be that, even to your ex. And that's where the rubber meets the road. Because if you're willing to do that to everyone except your ex, your kids will pick up on that inconsistency.
Yep.
And again, that's not easy.
Yep,
I get it. There are people out there who are going to be listening to this and going, I hate that guy. Why would I do that? And it's okay. You're allowed to hate me. Just take a number. There are plenty of people that do. That's okay. I got lots of students who aren't happy when I grade their papers. Like, that's fine with me too. But that's the thing. You need to be the adult you want your kids to become. That's the first principle. The second one is very similar. It's the golden rule, right? Treat other people the way that you want to be treated. Even your ex. Treat your ex the way that you would want to be treated. Why would I do that? Because that's what you want your children to do, right? You want your kids to be good people. Then you need to model that, and you need to treat other people that way. And that's very easy to say, and it's very hard to do. And the truth is, in the long run, you're not going to be able to unless you truly have a desire to make that happen. Because when the rubber meets the road, when it's really ugly, it's very easy to revert back to what we've done before.
Yeah, we want to be reactive and we want to come out of our, you know, it's when we're in pain, it's hard to think through things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what about if the ex is not on board with this whole program?
A lot of the time they're not going to be. And that's okay, because when I help people, I got to tell them right up front, listen, I cannot control your ex any more than you can. I can't guarantee that they are ever going to change or do anything differently. What I can do is I can help you change your heart so that even if they don't, you will feel better about doing your part. Mm-hmm. Now, is there a chance that when you treat them well, they may respond in kind? Absolutely. If you don't treat them well, are they likely to still treat you very poorly? Of course they are. So again, I can't guarantee anything about your ex. What I can do is I can help you try to do things better. Because even if you're the only one doing it, that's better than nobody doing it, right? And I learned that actually from, this is kind of embarrassing. I learned that from my former father-in-law, my ex-wife's dad. Not long after our divorce, I was angry about something. And in my stupidity, I thought my best option was to go to her father and complain about it. Right? Because I'm not that bright sometimes. So I go to her dad's house and I'm just griping. And he lets me gripe for 10 or 15 minutes and just sort of sits there. And finally, mid-sentence, he just yells, "Joel, stop it." Okay. What? And he looks at me and says, "Listen, if you couldn't get her to do what you wanted to when you were married, what on earth makes you think you can control her now?"
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, that's really not fun to hear, but entirely accurate. One, it wasn't my job to control her. It never was, even when we were married. And that was my own fault for not realizing that's what I was doing. But two, now that we're divorced, good heavens above, she doesn't have any reason to do anything that I'd want her to do. And that's okay, because she's not in control of me and I'm not in control of her. What I'm in control of is, how do I respond to her?
Yeah.
And how do I choose to model that for my children? Because like we touched on early on, if their mom does something I don't like, my reaction to that is going to speak volumes to my kids.
Yeah.
And that's something we need to be aware of. So I know we talked a lot about family culture. Well, that's a big part of it in blended families, is how are you choosing to model your relationship to your ex? Because what you do is teaching your kids how to respond to them too.
Yeah.
So if I badmouth their mom or I talk badly to their mom, they are going to see that and they are more likely to model that. And then it would be totally natural if she did the same thing back to me. And then we both wonder why we can't get our kids to do what we want them to do. Like, it's not real complicated.
Well, it also translates to the children possibly feeling less valued.
Or having to take sides.
Or fighting. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So Joel, now I want to transition a little bit now into, you know, what about now you get remarried, okay, mm-hmm. and you have to establish a new family culture with your now blended family. Yep. What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun and very complicated. And I say a lot of fun with a slight dose of sarcasm in there because it's really hard, but it's really
good. Well, you're
good
coming
too.
With your own, I mean, every new family comes with their own narratives and their own baggage, you know, all these kinds of things. It's just that it's like a stigma that if you've been married before, now you're going to be remarried, that you probably have a little more baggage or something.
I would argue there's some truth in that too.
Okay. And so, I mean, even if you've, anybody that's been in a previous relationship and then comes into a new one, you're going to have some stories and some triggers from that previous relationship, right? Yep. So how do you navigate that?
Yeah. So one of the things, and I learned a lot of this from, for any of your listeners who are in this kind of situation, I encourage them to look at the work of a guy named Ron Deal. He's got Family Life Blended is his website. He's kind of the godfather or the guru of blended family stuff within Christian circles. And my wife and I, before we got married, our pastor gave us one of his books to read as part of our premarital counseling. It's called The Smart Step Family, because I've been married before, have two kids. My wife had not been married before. But one of the things you mentioned that you're completely right about 100%, is every blended family is unique, right? Because again, I've been married, I got two kids. She had not been married before. Right? My ex-wife got married to a man who also didn't have any kids and hadn't been married before, but now they have a kid together. So their blended family is different than our blended family, right? And so it's within each blended family, your dynamics are going to be a little bit different. And so the principles that I teach work across the board, but the way that you apply them will be unique to your family. And so one of the things that I strongly encourage couples to do is before you get married, I've got a whole list literally on my website. It's a list. It's called like five discussions every blended family needs to have. And it's because you need to, now you're not going to work out every single kink before you get married. You're not going to work out every problem or whatever, but the more that you can at least bring up ahead of time, the more you're giving yourself a little bit of room and wiggle room to have already started those conversations. So for example, when my wife and I got married, we were talking about, even before we got married, we had the discussion of when do we tell my kids that we are dating, right? And so when I counsel people about this, because a lot of people have asked, okay, so I'm divorced, I've got two kids, or I've got a kid, I got three kids, whatever, and I'm dating this woman, should I introduce her to them? And my answer is always, are you going to marry her? Because if you're not 100% sure you're going to get married, the answer is no, don't introduce her to them. That's my recommendation. Okay. Because the thing is, if she's not going to be around for the rest of their childhood, don't let them get attached.
Right.
It's because what good can come of it if you two don't end up together? Again, that's not very fun.
More traumatic, right?
That's exactly right. But it's yet another hurt for those kids to have to deal with. And so, again, my wife and I dated for a number of months before. Now, they had known her. They had met her around because we're all from the same small town in Alabama. They knew who she was. They didn't know that we were dating until we'd been dating for a number of months. And then we said, no, you know, they call her Mel. Her name's Mary Ellen. They call her Mel. So they have mom and they have Mel. And so we said, okay, so Mel and I are dating and we're thinking about getting married in the future. And so we got engaged and then we got married and the girls were there when we got engaged, which is, that was pretty entertaining that day. and then they were there, they were part of our wedding ceremony when we got married and that was beautiful. And so another thing is to try to include the children in ways that are age appropriate. Because how we handled that when they were 3 and 5 or 6 and 8 or 10 and 12, that's very different than how we would handle things now that they're 13 and almost 16.
Right.
So you've got to consider those things as well. But again, a large part of it is asking yourself the question, what's best, not what do I want? And what's best is if you don't know 100% certain that you two are going to end up together, I wouldn't introduce your significant other to your kids yet. I would, once you've decided that you are going to get married and you're going to do that, I would definitely sit down and try to have some of these conversations. So conversations, and they can start out big or they can start out small. So for example, you're going to need to talk about your different family cultures and what your family norms or social mores are. So the background that I came from growing up and in my first marriage, we didn't really eat dinner around the kitchen table together a whole lot. I was really busy either coaching sports, playing pickup sports, or watching sports. And that was one of the issues in my first marriage because I'm kind of a sportsaholic. My wife, my second wife now, when we got married, even before we got married, we had dinner with her parents like once every 2 weeks. And that's something they do all the, like they sit down and have dinner together like 4 or 5 nights a week. And so when we were talking about getting married, that was something that was really big deal to her. She's like, no, this is what we should do because that's what families do is we have dinner together around the table. And I thought, all right. That hadn't really occurred to me before. We didn't do that when I was in high school. Yeah. We didn't really do that when I was in college. But that's wonderful because now it's one of the best, I'm telling you, that's one of the things that is the absolute best about any family is, and this, again, you can blame it on me being a history major or old fashioned or okay boomer or whatever you want to call it. But look, having dinner around the table with no screens is of absolutely infinite value to your family. Because you can talk about your day, you can talk about the future, you can talk about nothing important at all, or you can just laugh at the goofiness when somebody drops something on the floor and the dogs come and eat it, whatever. But the fact that you're spending uninterrupted, undistracted time together is one of the best things you can do in terms of being intentional about building your family culture. Because without saying anything, what you're doing is showing your family that they are the priority in your home.
Yeah.
And it's huge. That's huge, especially in a blended family where your kids need to know, look, just because dad is remarried doesn't mean he loves us any less. It doesn't mean that this new lady is going to come in and take our place in his heart. It also does mean she loves us too. Because look, we're all here together, that kind of thing. That's a huge part. And again, it sounds really simple, but you guys know, and I'm sure tons of your listeners know, people are busy. For you to make a commitment to sit around your dinner table at least 3 or 4 nights a week and just have uninterrupted dinner together, that's not a small thing. It sounds like it should be simple. It's not.
Yeah. But so crucial. So how do you help your, how did you help your children to make the transition to having Mel as your wife and now part of the family?
So we started slowly. Before we told them we were dating, we just happened to run into her a couple of different times, whether it was going to the park or she would come over to our house for dinner and we would just watch a movie together on the couch or whatever. And we did that once or twice a month in the first, you know, once we knew, she and I knew when we started dating, marriage was in the picture. Like that was the plan when we started dating. Cause embarrassingly, I resisted dating her for a while because I wasn't actually convinced that anybody would want to marry somebody like me. Cause when we started dating, I was 10 years older than her. I was broke and had just gone, you know, I'd been through divorce and foreclosure and bankruptcy. Like nobody looks at their dad and says, you know who I want to marry? A guy who's a decade older and two kids and broke. That's what I want. Like nobody says that. So by the time we actually started dating, I went and asked her parents for permission for us to date. And I told them during that conversation, if we date, the goal is to get married. So we knew that going in, but we still started very slowly with our kids because we didn't want to overwhelm them. We went to church together a few times. It was funny because one day my wife and I were sitting in church and one of my daughters came and sat between us. And Mel and I were holding hands and she reached over and pulled our hands apart.
Yep.
Right. Oh, it was after my wife, she's correcting me. She said that was after we told them we were dating. Thank you. But that happened. And so we put our hands back together and she pulled her hands apart again. I looked at her, I said, no, just very quietly, no. And just put our hands back together. Right. But that's one of those moments where it's like, I understand what she's feeling, but I'm not going to let I don't know if she was 7 or 8 at the time. I'm not going to let her dictate our relationship to the adults. 7-year-olds are not in charge of adults and there's a good reason for it. But I also didn't want to be harsh with her because I didn't want her to feel like what she was doing was not valid. It's okay for you to not like it, but what you're doing right now, that's rude and hurtful. And that's not going to be an okay way to express your dislike for our situation. So let's talk about it when we go home. That kind of thing. So then Mel would start coming over and having dinner every night and she would stick around until we put the kids to bed together. And then she would stick around for a while and then she would go home. And then we got engaged, right? And then and the same kind of pattern happened. And then Mel would take them to school in the mornings because I taught out of town. And so I had to leave early. So she would come over in the morning. Kids would get up. She would help them get ready. She would take them to school. She would pick them up from school in the afternoon on the weeks that they were with me. And so we just integrated her into the life that we were already living to where that just became the norm. So by the time we got married, like the kids were pretty used to it. And again, it hasn't been perfect. There have been some bumps in the road, but in general, it's been a lot smoother than what might have been expected. Because the other thing to look at is my two kids are both girls. They're both females. And that means it's the likelihood of relationship difficulties between the mom, the kids, and the stepmom is higher because of the gender issue. Like if I had sons, there's a good chance their stepdad and I might not get along very well because it would be a lot, you know what I mean? It's just the tension of the gender kind of thing. So, but that was a large part of how we did. It was just slowly integrating Mel more and more into our family life. So it wasn't like one day she's not there and the next day she's always there. It was just a slow, continual kind of a build. And that seemed to work really well. So that's what I recommend to a lot of people is take it slow, take it slow, take it slow. One of the word pictures that Ron Deal paints is comparing things that are cooked in a microwave to things that are cooked in a crock pot, right? Step family life has got to be a crock pot. It's got to be a slow cooker, right? I don't know if you guys use the term crock pot up in Michigan, but down here in the South, it's a big, but that's it. It's got to be slow cooked. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Slow transition. I appreciate that. Like, and integrating the new parent into the family relationship and norms. So how did you what role did the children play when you came together to discuss your family norms and your social mores and that you were able to, blend those things? What role did the kids play in coming to terms with those differences?
That's a really good question. So they were pretty young. The role they played wasn't so much discussing as it was just kind of showing. What I mean by that is if they weren't happy about something, they would typically make their displeasure known, not by talking about it, but by doing what little kids do, whether it was misbehaving or just not obeying or whatever it may have been. But again, the more that Mel integrated in, the more she took over some of the things that I had done. Like I got two daughters. So one of the things I learned mm-hmm. how to do years ago that helped when I had kids was I learned how to braid hair, right? But I'm not very good at, I can do it, but I do it like a dad. And so the more that Mel was around, the girls would stop coming to me and saying, "Daddy, could you braid my hair before bedtime?" And they go, "Mel, could you braid my hair before bedtime?" Right?
Nice.
Because Mel does a much better job of it than dad does. And so little things like that, or like I used to cook, but I'm an okay cook. I can keep people alive. I can keep people fed. I do a lot of crock pot ramen noodle kind of things. Mel's a great cook. And so we would cook together, and then more and more it became Mel cooking. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was looking at things and asking the question, okay, how can we make sure that what we're doing is still good for the kids, but also, how we want things to be in the long term. And again, yeah. it was kind of trial and error, and you integrate a few new things at a time. So whether it was Mel fixing their hair before bedtime or Mel coming over before church to help them pick out their clothes, because I'm colorblind as well. And so you don't want me picking out kids' outfit. It's real obvious if I dress my kids for church, right? Yeah. I mean, plaid matches plaid. Yeah. It's totally fine. Like I have no problem with three different kinds of plaid on a kid, whatever looks good. And when they were tiny, they didn't mind. When they got old enough to realize that was not okay,
No.
They let us know that was not okay. So, you know, yeah. but that was it. It was trying different things and seeing how the girls reacted. And if there were certain things they didn't like, okay, we could pick up on that and we could try doing things differently.
Okay. Oh, that's so cool. So what would you suggest as the top like system or strategy that will help a blended family be intentional about their family culture and what they're creating going forward as a new blended family?
So it has to do with what we talked about earlier. The first one is a mindset of humility, and mm-hmm. two, a scheduled time to sit down and have some of these discussions, right? Uh-huh. So even if it's just the adults to begin with, but maybe once a week, whether it's Sunday afternoon or whether it's Saturday morning or whether it's one night during the week, you and your spouse need to sit down and just plan on sitting for 30 or 60 minutes and just talking about the previous week and the upcoming week and asking yourself, what did we do that went well? What did we do that maybe we need to address? And make that a regular part of your routine. There's been a number of years during Mel and I's marriage where a lot of the best talking that we do is just driving around in the car. Like when we go on long road trips, we often have the best conversations while we're driving or while we go for a jog or when we take the dogs for a walk, because they were free of our other distractions, and it allows us to have a great conversation. But the thing is, you cannot have a successful blended family without good communication. You can't. It's just not possible. It's too complex. The relationships are too complicated to have a good situation without communicating about it. And so you've got to make that communication regular and not just like, you know, a text message regular. Like you've got to sit down and have the heart to heart connections and say, okay, so this thing happened last week and I wasn't happy about it. And I want you to know that because I don't want to just carry around that anger or frustration.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. And I say that because I'm normally the one who did something boneheaded that hurt my wife's feelings. Because you know what I mean? My superpower is the ability to unintentionally upset women of all ages, which has really served me well as a husband, father of daughters, and a high school teacher.
You learn a lot, I'm sure.
I learn a lot of what not to do, and I share that with people. So that helps narrow it down.
Awesome. I love that. That 100%, you need to have those family meetings and times to discuss the plans and the conflicts and resolve those things. I love that so much. Well, Joel, I've really loved talking about these things and know like this is amazing to know like every family that comes together, we just need to be intentional about our family culture.
And 100%.
Whether it's blended family or not, we all come from our unique backgrounds and we bring our baggage into the relationship, with whatever and whatever our family narratives are. And so I love what you're teaching about humility, about intentional communication, to have that intentionality about what you want to create as a family. And instead of butting heads, like, no, my family does this, or I did this before, and this is,
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't want to take, especially in a blended family situation, I imagine you don't want to bring some of the dysfunctional norms and traditions that may have occurred in your previous relationships into your new one.
Yeah. And you may not know they were dysfunctional. That's the hard part.
Right.
But you're exactly right. You don't want to bring those in if you can help it. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's one of the big ones is around like birthdays and holidays and what do you do? Because that's one that even just in a first marriage for both people in the couple, what you do with holidays often turns into a disagreement. In a blended family, not only do you have what are you going to do, you have what are you going to do compared to what you used to do in your previous marriage. And let me just tell you, anytime you have to start a sentence off with, well, in my previous marriage, we used to... it's a red
flag. Stop right there.
Sometimes you have to say that, but you're treading on thin ice anytime you do. And you certainly don't want to go, well, the way my ex-wife used to do it, like that's not, you don't want to.
I could see it if you're trying to vent some frustration or something, maybe.
Yeah, but again,
how
thin
is
ice.
That even productive? How is
right,
that?
That's exactly right. Just thin ice. Anytime you start a sentence with, well, the way my ex-wife used to, like thin ice, buddy, just beware.
Right. I mean, it's that way if you go, this is how my mom used to do it. And it's same type, you know, kind of same situation. Or this is how my dad does
I don't recommend that either.
Yeah, you really have to just, you know, say, well, why does that even matter? We're a new family. We're our own family. What
do
we
How would you like to do it? Let's talk about it. That's right.
Yeah, yep. Love that. Yep. So I want to hear about this. You are creating a free resource called the Complete Step Family Toolkit. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. So I put this together a couple months ago, and it is a series of five or six different tools that can immediately help blended families start to work better together. The first one is my what I call my 10 Commandments of Blended Family Life, and it's got the commandments and then kind of an explanation. And then it's also got another set of things called 10 Recommended Behaviors. These are not commandments, but these are suggestions. You don't always have to follow them, but I still think they're a good idea most of the time, right? And then it's got the list of what I call the five discussions every blended family needs to have. And then it also includes a 7-day blended family devotional that I wrote that's based on the book of Proverbs, because I think that's really helpful. It's a whole bunch of things that if you take a look at it, I'm telling you, there's something in there that can immediately make a difference either in your own mind or your own heart or in your own actions toward your blended family. As soon as you look at it, you can go and go, okay, I could see how doing that differently might be better. Or maybe you'll look at it and go, oh, good, that's what I was doing. It's really nice to have that confirmed, right?
Yeah, that sounds really valuable. So where can we find that?
If you want to go to one of my websites, it's called stepdadding.com. You can go there, and that should
That's
be the page
totally
that pops up
word.
When you go there.
No,
yeah, stepdadding. Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
Did you trademark that?
It's interesting. I didn't even create that website. Another guy created it about 8 years ago, and he gave it to me last year because his kids are grown, and he said, I'm just tired of keeping it up. It's a lot of work. And I've heard about the work that you're doing. I would love for someone like you to take it over. So I also have a disclaimer on there because I'm not a stepdad. I don't want to falsely portray myself. I don't stepdad. I bio dad, but stepdadding is a real thing, and I'm trying to help people learn how to do it. Go to stepdadding.com and you can find it on there. You can email me through the Contact Joel website. You can look at, I've got, reallifeleading.com is where a lot of my other information is, or joelwhallbaker.com is where my speaker page is. Anybody that emails me, or you can connect with me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you find me there, send me a message. I'll send you the complete Step Family Toolkit for free. I'll just send you the PDF of it. You can have it. I've also got my leadership books you were kind enough to mention in the intro. Same kind of thing. Anybody that's interested, email me. I'll send you a free PDF of the book. I'm not worried about making money off it. If you want it, I want you to have it.
Cool.
So get in touch with me. I'll send you the resource and answer any questions that I can to try to help you with your blended family as well.
Cool. So valuable. Thank you so much, Joel. I really appreciate you being here on the show, and thank you for your work to help families to have an intentional family culture. It's so important. And this movement is so, it's dear to my heart. I just feel like families are really going to, we need to get behind this to support the world. Like, families are really going to change our culture at large, and we just need to take on that responsibility and that role to know that families are that important. So thank you so much, Joel.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I love the work you're doing about creating intentional family culture. I think that's the whole point, is that a lot of people are doing it just kind of how it comes up, and it's very reactive. So I love your approach of being proactive about it. Thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you again for tuning in to another amazing episode of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture podcast with me, Jody Chafee. I'm so excited to have you here. And I wanted to let you know that there's even more amazing content inside of my Facebook group. It's called The Family Culture Hackers. Inside the group, I broadcast these episodes on Fridays before I publish them out as podcast episodes. So if you want a first look at each of these interviews, make sure you come and join the group. I'm also hosting events and masterclasses and coaching calls inside of the group. So make sure you come and request to join. Just come into Facebook and search Family Culture Hackers, and you will be accepted into the group and we'll have a great time. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. And remember that if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.